Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. This episode is long. I'll be honest, the main reason is that the clock disappeared from my laptop. But my conversation with Joelle was so informative, so reassuring, so normal, that I just wanted to let her talk. She walked the walk, and now she's talking the talk. And if you ever receive the cancer diagnosis, that talk might be your teacher. It might be your safety net. It might be your nonverbal best friend. It might be your lifeline. Because Joelle is such a great blend of smarts and empathy and coach and cheerleader. She is such a great model to bookmark. Listen now. Does anything bring a dreadful sense of foreboding into your life, like the word cancer? My guest today calls it a curveball. I think I'd accompany that with a few expletives. Joelle's journey started at age 13. Yes, you're allowed to laugh. Joelle's journey started at age 13 when her mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. Then it was her sister. I can't imagine what it was like to wait and wonder if she was next. She was. Joelle calls cancer a team sport, but you must be the captain. I've had several women on this podcast who have traveled a similar path, and they all said the same thing. In her profile, she says, while there's no one-size-fits-all cancer story, you can learn to craft yours from a place of power, not fear. It can mean the difference between merely surviving cancer and emerging with a renewed zest for life. Let's meet her now. Joelle Kaufman, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Love it. Love it. You know, can't stop the journey. So I love to embrace it and make it awesome.
There you go. That's great. Yeah. I glossed over your story in 36 words. I counted them. Could you tell us more, as much as you're comfortable talking about? 13 is so very young to have cancer take such a huge role in your life.
It is. And, you know, 36, which is my mother's age when she was diagnosed, is also unbelievably young. And, you know, I my first reaction was, this doesn't make sense. Cancer happens to older people, not to young tennis champions who are vibrant. And I mean, she had just returned to work full time. Right. She was teaching, and yeah, it was stressful, but you know, she was vibrant. And I like to tell people, she's now a almost 78-year-old vibrant kick-ass woman. So part of the reason I like to tell our story of cancer is our story isn't one of death and of, I mean, I guess we all have a new set of boobs, but it's not, our lives have not been restricted or handicapped long term because of cancer. And I don't think people realize that, you know, there are people who die of cancer, and that is tragic and awful. But the majority do not. And the reason you have that first reaction with all the expletives is the first thing that goes through your head is, am I going to die? And I'm trying to expedite the process for people to say, maybe, but probably not, and not today, right? And when you get to not today, now the question is, what do I want to do with today? So, you know, I was 13. I did some research in a library because it was the 80s and that's how you did research. I determined that it was early. She was young and strong. She was going to be fine. And like every good teenager, it's like, okay, this kind of sucks. And I really hate that my mom's in the hospital, but it's going to be fine. And let's all get back to life as we know it. To the point where Agnes, I didn't even remember all of the reconstructive surgeries she had. And she had a lot. So maybe I just was a self-absorbed teenager. I was 13. Like, okay. then it recurred when I was 15. And that wasn't supposed to happen. And that really rocked my world. And turned out that led to chemo, radiation, And chemo is how cancer reminds you every week or every 2 weeks, I'm still here. You're not done with me yet. I'm still here. And it can remind you because you lose your hair, although I didn't. It can remind you because you're feeling queasy or foods don't taste good. It can remind you, like my mother had to take a steroid that made her face very round. Her face is, I know this is audio only, but I have a oval or narrow face. And I get it from my mom, who has a narrow face, except on steroids, she had a round face. So she had all these reminders that she was dealing with cancer. And in the mid 80s, people didn't rally to support her. People talked about cancer as if it was a communicable disease. It was cancer, right? And that was very lonely for her, for my dad, even for my sister and I. And what I realized as I got older is, I mean, it's not uncommon. There's a lot of people who face a lot of different cancers. And breast cancers, pretty common. Prostate cancers, very common. Skin cancers, pretty common. You know, then you start getting into less common, but still around, where you've got the leukemias and the lymphomas and the Hodgkins and the non-Hodgkins. And then you get to the cancers that are less common and more deadly, like lung cancer or stomach cancer or pancreatic cancer or ovarian cancer, right? But like, there's a lot of them. In fact, we should talk about cancer as a class of diseases, because even breast cancer, there's 120 varieties. So anyway, it was very impactful, but it also brought silver linings, which I would choose a different way to get. But my family got very close. We were sure we could rely on each other. We knew how to support each other. We really made a habit, and we still to this day, of seizing opportunities to celebrate and have joy, because you don't know when cancer or, God forbid, something else is going to rear its head. So you may as well make a big deal out of all the good things, because generally we know when those are. Like, you know when someone's getting married or when a baby's born, or you have a celebration, like in my family, a bar mitzvah or a graduation, or, hey, it's my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. Let's all go away together. It's the 55th or my grandmother's 90th, right? We make celebrations and we make a point to show up for them. So I think that's a lesson. And maybe, you know, by the time people are boomers and they're listening, they're like, yeah, we figured that out already. But cancer is one of the things that makes you figure that out.
You say we probably figured it out. So often I think we figure it out on a superficial level. So, yeah, I mean, a 50th wedding anniversary, celebrate. Even 50th birthday, celebrate. But how about just the fact that it's been a nice sunny day for 5 days in a row? You know, things like that. And I don't know if we're getting into mindfulness and gratitude and that sort of thing right now, but it just... We need to embrace life generally. This is why we don't do videos, because I always talk
so
with
do
my
I.
hands.
It's okay.
But not just do the obvious celebrations.
I want to go deeper on that point. When I was finally diagnosed with cancer, and you know, Agnes, the kicker was I didn't spend a lot of time dreading it, wondering if I would be next. I sort of accepted that it was probably going to happen, and I had a plan. So the cool thing about knowing you have a high probability for something is you can actually think about, well, what would I do? And I felt very lucky because, I mean, I was diagnosed the day before I was supposed to have a prophylactic bilateral mastectomy. That didn't feel lucky. That felt like an F you from the universe. But I did know what to do, and I knew what I was going to do. And so many people, when they're diagnosed with cancer, their first question is, what did I do wrong? How did this happen to me? I didn't have those questions. I have a genetic mutation. It was highly probable this would happen. I did every single thing I could, except a prophylactic mastectomy, to reduce my risk. And the card came up. But I knew what to do. Like my answer was, you have to be effing kidding me. Can you recommend an oncologist? Like it was boom, boom. They were part of the same breath. And I try to tell people, when you hear cancer, you're probably going to hear it from someone who isn't an oncologist. Because why would you have an oncologist? So you're going to hear it from your general practitioner or from your OB-GYN or your gerontologist or a radiologist. Like you're going to hear it from somebody who isn't going to be the treating doctor. And your first question should be, please recommend oncologists, because they are the medical quarterback. They are your partner. So I knew what to do. I knew what I was going to do. I didn't have the questions of what I did wrong. And I didn't have mourning about losing my breasts because I had already accepted that that was going to happen. So in a lot of ways, it made it easier. But let's go to your mindfulness point. I had seen my mother, my sister go through chemo multiple times. And I knew what chemo could look like. And I said, I kind of don't want my chemo to look like that. Now, my cancer was treatable, was highly likely to be responsive to chemo. So I didn't even want to consider not having chemo. So having chose chemo, how do I make chemo as good as possible? So there's some medical things which we can talk about later. But chemo has a routine, has a rhythm. I was on the weekly cycle. So every week I'd have chemo. You go to the infusion center, they pull your labs, you wait. Then your labs are okay, you go back, you wait. They do the pre-treatment. Then they start the chemo. And then I did something called cold capping to keep my hair, which means I was there for 2.5 hours longer. So more waiting. I'm not someone who idles well. So I wanted to think intentionally about all that time. So here's what I did. And I named them in retrospect. I was embedding happiness tripwires across this whole routine. Number one, I got to wash my hair on chemo day. It was the only day of the week. And I just loved the feeling of washing my hair and the water running over my body. Like that was just great. So I started with just a moment of appreciating how wonderful the water felt and how great it felt to just, you know, I couldn't scrub hard because I don't want to pull out my hair, but just the feeling of massaging your head in self-care. Then I'd have a friend. Different people would drive me to chemo. So I'd get to visit with someone for 20 minutes. That was great. They'd hang out with me sometimes for the labs. That was fine. I got music from my son. I had a musical prayer list from my rabbi that I could listen to when I was waiting. Every week, I asked my other son to send me a letter. So I got 12 letters from my college freshman son. Every week, I got a letter. It was like digital chocolate. Like, who doesn't love a letter from their kid across the country, right? Right? You can't help but fill yourself with joy. I got texts from friends that had little emojis of kisses. There were greeting cards that people sent. Like, I got a joke from another friend. You know, he said, what can I do? I said, send me a joke every day. He did. So all of these things made me feel good. And what I learned in retrospect, and this is important, I noticed them. I deliberately paused and appreciated that feeling, that what you're doing right now, like that it washes over you, right? Right? You feel something right now, Agnes, right?
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Okay. So what's happening biochemically is your body is releasing serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin. So A, you feel good. That's great. B, it's giving you a boost of energy. C, it's actually focusing your mind. And D, it's boosting your immune system. So throughout my chemo day, and then I started doing them on other days, what have you, these happiness tripwires were like microdosing me with this powerful three hormones. Boom, 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 ah. Boom, 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 ah. And so my days were pretty good. I also got a fabulous nap from the Benadryl. But, you know, my days were good, my chemo days. Now, the medical stuff was how I was very proactive about managing nausea, managing for neuropathy, managing my hair. Like, there are things you can do. But I felt pretty great. This triple dose, these three hormones, and all these happiness tripwires so bolstered my immune system that by my 12th cycle, not only was I getting 1/8 of the standard steroid, so remember, my mother got this round face, I kept tapering off the steroid because I didn't need it. My immune system was doing great, even though chemo was given the full-on attack. Number two is my doctor looked at my labs at my 12th cycle and said, Joelle, I'd never think these are the labs of someone going through chemo. Agnes, I did nothing else. I exercised, but I'd always been exercising. I ate well because I eat well. I slept because I sleep. The difference was the happiness tripwires. And so I invite your listeners, these are not hard. These are not, you don't have to write a journal. You don't have to change your life. You actually just have to notice it happening and let it wash over you. Get the full burst. So if it is, you know, if you're a grandparent and it is seeing a picture of your grandchild, awesome, do that. If you don't have children and you like a pet or a sunflower, or, you know, you just reach out and talk to a friend and say, I love you. I'm just so glad you're in my life. Now you feel it and they feel it. It's like a double whammy. It's awesome.
Well, and it sounds to me too that this is all possible now because we have all this technology. Back in the 80s, your mom wouldn't have been able to get emails or, you know, jokes in an email.
That's right.
Like that sort of thing. It would really take an, as well as I totally agree that it was always talked about behind the hand because it might be contagious. Not that it ever was, but it was just, you know, that aura. But yeah, so I'm really glad to be having this conversation with you in this day and age with what we've got, because I'm just thinking, you know, my son is a continent away, but he could still write me that letter or send me that joke or that photograph or something more often.
And you could to him.
And actually, I grinned.
And you could to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there, yeah. We do, we have the ability to do it. And, you know, the number one question people who don't have cancer ask me is, what do I do for someone who has cancer? Right? Because look, 1 out of every 2 Americans and 1 out of every 4 people in the world are going to be diagnosed with cancer. It is statistically impossible that you will not have to figure out, what do I do? And a lot of people are deeply uncomfortable because the first thing you think when someone has cancer is, oh, thank God it's not me. Right? And then you're like, oh my God, I'm such an asshole because I just thought that. And it's a normal thought, right? But what can you do? Well, you can say, this sucks. I'm really sorry this is happening to you. And I'd like to send you a little burst of happiness whenever I can. So I can send you a cat meme. I can send you a joke. I can call you once a week. Like, which one sounds good to you? And, you know, I have a friend going through treatment for pancreatic right now. And my thing is, I just send him a note every few days, you know, little note of encouragement. And he knows he never has to respond. I am happy to just let him know you are in my heart. You are on my mind. And, you know, I just want you to know you're important to me. And I'm giving him that triple dose of hormones that are going to do whatever they can.
I always come with notes, and further on in my notes, I ask, oh, what are happiness tripwires? Because I did see that somewhere. And it's like, I had no concept of, it's not just happiness tripwires. It's happiness tripwires. Like it's, you know, all caps, mm-hmm. bold, italic, whatever, you know, like, yeah, that's
Thank you.
Huge. And yeah, and I can really see how. Yeah, it's interesting because you said the first thing you think when somebody's diagnosed, somebody you know, I can remember many years ago where we went through a stage where several moms in our mm-hmm. circle were diagnosed. We lost them.
I'm sorry.
And because of that, it wasn't, thank goodness it wasn't me. It's, oh crap, could I be next?
Same idea.
Because there was no difference between right. us.
And cancer is random that way.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Like it grinds my gears. And I did a joint podcast with my surgeon, Dr. Laura Esserman. And I mean, her whole career has been dedicated to figuring out, how do we prevent this disease? How do we get detection so good that we know who's at risk and we know, well, no, it's not going to be you because you know, like 60% of women who were diagnosed have no family history. But 40% of women who are diagnosed have a genetic mutation. They just didn't know it. Right? Again, the gift of my mother and really my sister's cancer, which was horrible. She was 29. She was 3 months before her wedding. Like, there's nothing I can say good about the timing. She had just done an Ironman. All I can say is she's fine. She's a kick-ass woman, and we made it. And she made it. But because of her, we confirmed that we had this mutation. And so everybody was on high alert, right? But most people don't know. Some people don't know their family history because people don't talk about it, or they're adopted, or, you know, maybe the people they think are both of their parents, maybe one really isn't. Like, these are all the things we've learned recently through other technologies. But
through previous podcasts. Yeah,
exactly. But, you know, so we have to be very strong advocates for ourselves. And, you know, the single best way, and the most common of the cancers for women is breast cancer. The single best way to detect your breast cancer is your two hands. And you must know your body. And if something changes, you don't let anyone dismiss you. You know, something's changed. This is a change. I want to make sure let's get a mammogram. Let's get an MRI. Let's get a biopsy. Let's confirm that this change is nothing. Because if we confirm it's nothing, great, it's nothing. But if it's something, I want to find it early. So Dr. Esserman runs a trial. One of them, it's called the I-SPY trial. And it's for stage 2 and stage 3 breast cancers. 80% of those women found their own tumor.
Well, huge. That's huge.
Now, I'm all for screening, mammograms, ultrasounds, like whatever, like do that too. But once a year is not enough. Every month. And, you know, it doesn't matter when you do it, just do it.
And the other part of that is start today, yesterday, because that's the best way, to, you know, like, well, as you found out, as your mother found out, you know, it's not an older person's disease, but get to know what your breasts feel like, what your body feels like now, so that you notice the changes.
And don't be afraid to go to a doctor and say something's changed, because A, that's their job, and B, early detection is often the difference between being in the survival group or being in the non-survival group. Right? I was stage 2. My mother and sister were both stage 1. That's really good news. Stage 4, and I know lots of stage 4 people, they can live a really long time now, which is awesome. But you'd rather be stage 1 or 2. That's just better. So I wrote in the book, Crushing the Curveball, all of these steps because, Agnes, the first time you face cancer, I don't care how old you are, it's disorienting. It's a new language. It's a whole new set of medical things. There's a lot of fear because in Hollywood, cancer is a plot device, and it's a dramatic plot device to make you feel emotion and sad and, you know, all those things. So we're all programmed. And then you have your life history, your lived history, where in your mom's group, you lost a couple of people to cancer. I mean, all of that's there. So you hear this horrible six-letter word, and what do you do? Now, if you've been through it before, like I had been, you know what to do. And that actually gives you confidence. It gives you power. It makes the ground, like, yeah, the earth shifted. I was like, ugh, great. I got to deal with this. And, you know, we start dealing with it. But when I wrote the book, I said, how do I give 43 years of experience to the newly diagnosed or the people who love them and say, I don't know what your treatment's going to be because I'm not an oncologist. I don't know what your outcome's going to be because I'm not God. But I do know what the steps of the process are likely to be and what you can do where you have agency and influence over those choices. So let me give you that. And use it as you will to be, if you will, when you're feeling like you're drowning, a life ring.
You're going exactly where my notes are going, which is great. Because you divide your book up into five
Yeah.
segments, and the first one being
No, the
diagnosis.
first one is actually before diagnosis. Just to let you know, the first one is prevention, because the first
You're
place
right.
is what can we do to try to reduce the number of people
Okay.
dealing with this disease? So, sorry. I
Okay.
just the second part
As you
is
know, as you
diagnosis.
say that, I'm thinking, yeah, it's a big long page on your profile, so I apologize
It's
for
okay.
that.
No.
Okay, so in terms of prevention, if we implement some of your happiness tripwires into our life just because we can, is that a good start?
Well, first
Because I
off,
think they're a great idea.
your life will be better. So, yeah, go do that because they can't hurt you and your life will be better. So that's number one. Number two, stress and cortisol. There's some evidence that stress has some connection to cancer. And here's the way to think about it. If you think cells are replicating all the time and cancer is replication run amok, right? Your immune system is kind of built to detect things that are run amok and get rid of them. And somehow cancer either resists the immune system, is transparent to the immune system, defeats the immune system, whatever it is. But a happiness tripwire is bolstering your immune system and shouldn't, just like you should sleep well and, you know, get your all your fruits and vegetables and all your nutrients. Like, yes, we should do things that bolster our immune system because that's a good idea. Happiness tripwires bolster your immune system. That's a good idea. They cost nothing. They're not time consuming. And I break them into three types. I've done this subsequent to the book. I do a talk on them. But there's the one you do for yourself, like looking at a picture, enjoying the sunshine on your face. That's great. It's a wonderful one. There's the ones you do that you give to somebody else, and you will feel that burst from them. And then there's things you actually do together. And, you know, by doing them together, like the driving me to the infusion. I felt great, they felt great. Like there was a lot of happiness happening just being together in the car. So I would say happiness tripwires are great, and know your medical history and inspect your skin once a month, inspect your breasts or your testes, depending on your gender or your born sex. I don't want to, whatever it is. If you were born with breasts or you're born with testes, make sure you check those things out. And you know, see your doctor if something's changing. If your digestive system is behaving differently, see your doctor. Right? Like these, you have to listen to your body. And I'm not saying be a hypochondriac. If, you know, one day your stomach's upset, you probably don't need to run to the doctor. If for 2 weeks your stomach's upset, you really should be seeing a doctor.
I was just thinking as you were talking that we could almost reinvent the chain letter or the phone tree or
Yeah.
something. Like just put it out and say, okay, this is what I'm sending you now. Send something to five more people. You know, we could do this. It's
Absolutely.
going to come back to
Let's
you.
make the biggest virus be the virus of happiness tripwires. Right?
There we go. Let's just we can shut this down right now. I think that's a great
That's how we're
idea.
done.
But we're not going to. We're not
Everybody
going
who's listening, pause right now.
to.
Pause the recording and just send a moment of happiness to somebody in your life. Just anything. It can be as simple as
There we
I
go.
love you. And I've been asked, Agnes, by people like, well, because I had a tremendous community that ended up supporting me and my family, as did my sister when she went through. And that was a big difference from when my mother went through, because we told people, because there is technology to help mobilize people, and people wanted to help. But we had to guide them on how to help, right? So a happiness tripwire is an easy guide. People want to say, like, hey, Agnes, tell me what I can do. Well, you just gave Agnes more work to do. So chapter 16 of my book actually gives you a laundry list of things you can do. So you can actually say, is there a meal train? I would love to be part of it. Or, you know, my sister, the meal train filled up and she said, I would like people to go for a walk with me every day. And so I put together a spreadsheet, I put it out to all of her friends, and boom. And it said, this is the time, we're walking for 30 minutes, and if Tracy's not feeling well, she can cancel. No harm, no foul. these are just simple things. And the biggest gift, which my best friend Jessica gave me, was she said, I'm going to organize all of that. You tell me what you need, and I will handle all the administrative part. Fantastic. I didn't have to think about it. It just kept happening.
And I've heard, it's probably true that, you know, like if you start asking, well, what can I do for you? The person's probably going to say, oh, don't worry about it or whatever. Whereas to take the initiative and even it just to reword, like leave it a question, but reword it. Could I send you a funny cat meme every day just to brighten your morning? Like whatever. Give the suggestion, you know, like that sort of thing.
Right. And then they're like, wow, that would be great. Or actually, I hate cats, but, you know, dolphins. Dolphins would be great, right? Like, whatever it is. I've had people whose family members or loved one is multiple states or a continent away. And they're like, how do I help with food? I'm like, DoorDash, Uber Eats. The real question is, what do you like eating as you're going through this? Do you want soup? Do you want, like, you can't have sushi because you can't have raw things. You probably can't have spicy food because that's not, tends to not work with the chemo. You can't have grapefruit because you can't have high doses of vitamin C. But given those parameters, what would you like? I'd like to send you a meal from Uber Eats or DoorDash, or if you're in the UK, I think Kangaroo or Bizaboo or what, there's all these things. We live in the era where you can do it. But do not do it unless you've asked, because we end up with refrigerators full of food. Or one of my friends has a son who's been battling leukemia, and he said, for the love of God, please don't send us flowers or stuffed animals. The flowers, the scent makes him nauseous. And we have so many stuffed animals, we're like, if you really want to give a stuffed animal, let us know that you did it and give it to a shelter or, you know, a hospital somewhere that they, you know, need them, because we do not need them.
I talked to somebody recently who said we ended up with like 7 lasagnas in the fridge. You know, and it's like, oh my God.
Like, you know, everyone's like a casserole. I eat very clean. I'm very careful. And so, again, my friend Jessica did this, was like, here's what providing a meal looks like. It's a protein. It's a vegetable. There is no pasta. There's unlikely to be rice. Like, you have to make it work with protein and vegetables. And if you can't do that, here's a dozen other things you could do. Like, that's fine. There's enough people who can do that. And we had them do it every other day. And, you know, please don't provide food for 20 people. There's only 3 of us that live in this house.
Dear, and you know, the hard part is people
it's
do
so heartfelt.
Well, but,
it's so heartfelt. Yeah, yeah. But like, I don't want to have food rotting in my refrigerator. Like, A, I don't want to waste the food. But B, that's more work. The other thing I think is important, and this is why I want to redefine the narrative, Agnes. I hated people being like, oh, are you okay? Or, wow, you're just handling this so well. And both were really heartfelt. And both made me feel like I was a victim, that I was somehow to be pitied. And I knew it was compassion. And I saw it as compassion and caring. But I want to give people knowledge that, like, cancer patients don't want to told to be strong or be positive or, gosh, I never know how I could do this. Like, if you were facing cancer, you'd do it because you'd have no other option. What they want to know is, hey, this sucks. I'm sorry it's happening for you. Like, I want to do this. I want to do this to help you, to support your family. You know, great. Meet me there. And if I want to rage, if I want to cry, if I want to be unhappy, be there for it. Let me have my feelings. And that'll help me get through them.
That's huge, because to just sort of go for a walk with you or whatever, and whether it's hold your hand, put an arm around you as you sob unstoppingly, it seems, as opposed to burdening you with, you're going to get through this. Tomorrow will be better. Well, BS. You know, maybe tomorrow won't be
Or maybe it will, but
better.
right
You
now,
know, and
right now is not good.
I can't even see tomorrow
Yeah,
right
and
now.
even if you can, and I mean, I'm a real fix-it kind of person, but right now, you know, I wrote about this in the book. Again, I had a very positive, like, I was convinced this wasn't going to kill me, and that was a very helpful outlook, and I had reasons to believe that. My doctors, my families, whatever. So somewhere around my first infusion, right before it, I was watching a TV show that I really like, and the TV show opens with the funeral of one of the major female characters. I remember thinking, like, the fifth season didn't end that way. What's going on? And I remember reading something, so I Googled it, and it turns out this fabulous actress died at 52 of breast cancer. I didn't sleep that night, right? Because I'm like, she clearly had resources. I'm sure she wanted to live. She had children, she had a family, and you know, she drew a really short stick. And you know, that really rattled my cage. And I voiced it by writing. And I posted that onto my Caring Bridge. Not because I needed people to tell me, "Don't worry, that's not you." Like, I know I'm not Helen McCrory. I'm aware. And I even wrote, I know nothing about her diagnosis, what stage she was at, what treatment she got or didn't get. Like, I know nothing. And her family owes me none of those details. All I felt like, this is a woman my own age who died of this disease, and that unsettles me. And I'm going to have to be unsettled for a moment or two. Okay. And then it passes, right? I'm not going to, you know, continuously dwell in what happened to Helen McCrory. I feel terrible for her and her family. And I hope my story is different. So far, so good.
No, ain't that the truth? Now, you said two magic words. Tell us about this Caring Bridge.
So Caring Bridge is a free website. It's caringbridge.org. It's supported fully by donations. I have no relationship with the company. But it is a way for people to communicate with their communities about what's going on with them health-wise. And the reason I recommend it or something like it over posting on Facebook or whatever else is, A, you have complete control over who sees it. You can post it onto Facebook and anyone who wants can click, or you can make it by invitation only. That's what I did. My invitations were pretty easy and people could share the invitation, but I said, I really don't want this on social media. I don't want to be targeted advertising based on my cancer diagnosis. That's just a personal preference. But part of it became, I want to control as much as possible how much time I dwell in cancer land. It's the world's worst amusement park. So if I can only dwell there one day a week and the other 6 days I can be normal, oh, please. So that means my social media can't be constantly saying cancer, 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 because then I'm back in this amusement park. So Caring Bridge lets me write that. And when you're invited to someone's Caring Bridge, you can post a heart, you can write a comment, and we can see who's posted a heart and who wrote a comment. So it's another simple way of doing a happiness tripwire. And one of the things that is exhausting to cancer patients and their close caregivers is every good-hearted, caring, loving person says, "How's it going? How's it going? What's the update?" And so you wind up telling people the same thing easily 100 times in 24 to 48 hours. That's actually the opposite of a happiness tripwire. That's like a drain. And that's not meaning you shouldn't ask. But what I've done for people is said, "Look, I recommend Caring Bridge. If you want me to write your Caring Bridge and you just tell me and I'll communicate to everybody, you can do that in Caring Bridge. You can have multiple authors, right? So I don't want to give you work, but people are going to want to know what's going on and how it's progressing. And you don't want to repeat the same thing over and over again. Guaranteed." And you know, you could do it in your own blog. I mean, I don't really care how you do it. I don't have a dog in that race. Caring Bridge is specifically set up for these kind of health situations.
I think it was Caring Bridge that we used. I do some elder care, and we had a woman who was diagnosed palliative, and so their family arranged for, I'll say 24-hour care, like we'd all have different size of shifts, anywhere from like 4 hours to 29 hours. And we would, at the end of our shift, write everything into Caring Bridge so that, again, the family wasn't bothering the hospital staff. They weren't, we didn't have to email five right. or 10 or 15 people. They would just read the update from each caregiver as we finished our
A fine our way shift. To use it. And that might have only been like a Caring Bridge yeah. just for the family to communicate with all these caregivers.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely a great use case. So I think in today's day and age, it behooves you to tell people what's going on. And people worry, like, I don't want to be pitied. I don't want to be sidelined at work. I don't want, you know, you can make the whole list. It's my experience that most people are really good people, and they're actually really hurt if you were going through something hard and they didn't know, because you didn't give them the opportunity to show you that they mean, you mean something to them. So tell people, but tell people the rules. Like, I was really clear with people. I'm going to use this Caring Bridge. Don't share it on social media. Don't send me links to articles and studies. I have a great medical team and Dr. Google ain't on it. And please don't pity. Like, I really hate that. I should have added, please also don't make suggestions about how I should eat or a supplement or whatever else. Like, if I have a question, I'll ask, but I'm probably going to ask people who are in the science that I'm dealing with. So I know those are all expressions of caring, but those come with weight. You know, I had one friend, a good friend, he's like, you know, I've heard a vegetarian diet is better and cancer reducing. I was like, you know, there's no evidence of that, and I couldn't live that way. And so is it my fault that I don't eat only vegetarian, so that's why I got cancer? No, I got cancer because I have a gene. It's that simple. And, you know, there is, unfortunately, we do not know enough about what triggers cancers. And we don't know, like, we know that the number of cancers being diagnosed is going up. And it's going up dramatically among younger people, which leads you to believe something has changed. Something environmental, something in our food supply, something. But nobody knows what. And so all of the ideas of, if you take this supplement, you'll never get cancer. That's snake oil, because there's no science. Eat healthy, exercise, have as much love in your life as you can possibly have. Sleep well, know your body. That's it. That's it. That's the best we can do so far in prevention.
And it's interesting you say that, and I appreciate the fact you said that, because I get so many requests to be guests on podcasts. And if they come on promoting their MLM and all the stuff it can do, it's just like, thanks, right. but no thanks. You know, because I do research before I say
smart.
Yes. You know, yeah. And it's just like, no, like, You believe in your MLM and she believes in her MLM and, you know, whatever. We're not going to have competing. And I'm also not going to promote snake oil on my podcast. It's really important that I give really good information.
Right.
You know, whatever it pertains
right.
to.
I will say that if people are going through chemo, there is an issue about vitamin C and chemotherapy. You should talk to your doctor about it. But I tell them people, like, tell your doctor everything you're eating, everything you're taking, because they, more information helps them treat you better. So, you know, be an open book. You don't have to tell everybody in your life all of that, but you definitely have to tell your medical team.
I was just really upset when you said avoid spicy foods. I was like, oh no.
Only, so during chemotherapy, again, part, depending on the drug you're on, right? What chemotherapy, it can change the pH in your mouth. And so some people get mouth sores.
Okay.
I didn't. But what they want you to do is be aware that only during the course of treatment. So mine was 12 weeks. So you'd go without spicy food for 12 weeks. I assure you, the day I was done with chemo, I had sushi and I had wine. So like, it was literally like, and we're done. And so, you know, we can go without for a period of time. And the reason is to prevent mouth sores, because that then makes, and it doesn't always work. Some people get mouth sores anyway, right? There's no guarantees. And, you know, maybe it's just not as much spice, enough for flavor, but not to burn the membranes of your mouth.
Well, I think too, I mean, when push comes to shove, like just keep on eating the spicy foods and
that can be too.
Happens, or give up spicy foods in exchange for, gee, your life.
Exactly. Know, and again, it's short term, right? The thing.
Well, even if it was for life,
okay.
Though, it's like, okay, make your choices here.
Yeah, there's lots of flavors in the world, and you know, some of the strong sugars and some of the strong spices, they drown all these other great flavors. So, you know, life is pretty diverse, but I think you have the right perspective, Agnes. And what I try to do is, you know, give people a sense of, often cancer treatment is somewhat time bound. So, you know, I would say to myself, I can do anything 12 times. I can do anything 4 times. And the 12, I celebrated when I got to 4. I celebrated at 6. I celebrated at 9. I celebrated at 12, because why not? And these weren't big celebrations. They were just, you know, happy things. These were bigger happiness tripwires, mini milestones. So one milestone was my son that was writing the letters is a collegiate baseball player, and his first games, he was going to play in Florida. Well, I live in California, and I wanted to be healthy enough that I could go to Florida for a few days and see some of his games. And I told my medical team, they said, we don't see a problem with that. I told my friends, and a couple of them were like, you're going to get on a plane? I said, I'm going to wear a mask. We all have them now. And, you know, I'm going to be okay. And it was a big deal. It was a big deal for me because, hey, I'm strong enough and healthy enough to be here. It was a big deal for my son because he couldn't come home to see me. And, you know, there's one thing about me saying, I'm good. And then there's seeing me. I mean, like, really? Like, I don't look like the movie version of people that look all gaunt and are, you know, pale and bald and moving slow. Like, I was like, I'm still lifting weights. I'm still running. I'm still a spaz. You know, I'm just running a little slower, but that's okay. It's temporary. And, you know, you get through it. And what's hard, Agnes, is when you're done, you feel this void because your life has been centering around all this treatment and how you're going to get through it. And then you get to the end and you say to the doctor, they say, congratulations, you don't have cancer. This is a great thing. Awesome. See you in 3 months, huh? Why don't you want to see me in 3 weeks? I've got nothing to see you for. It's just suddenly your life is empty again. Not empty, but this thing in your life is gone. And so one of the things I talk about in the last section of the book is the void. And people want to say, like, what does it mean? You know, how is my life different because I got cancer? I'm like, it might not be. It might just be your life. That's okay. It doesn't have to be some profound life-altering, philosophy-changing experience. If it is, good on you. That's great. If you've decided life's too short to do a job I don't like, great. Life's too short to have people in my life I don't like, fine. But if you're like, you know, I kind of like what I do and I kind of like who I do, who I spend my life with, you don't have to go change it because you got cancer.
Well, and it's easy for me sitting here on the other side of the mic, but how many things in life change your life? You know, whether it's graduating, getting married, having children, you know, whatever, like all those things, they change your life somehow. But we always usually think that they're happy things. And so I guess, yeah, you just have to reframe. And as you said, with all your happiness tripwires, yeah, you're dealing with this thing and it's a bitch. But, you know, you can still find those tripwires.
And you need them. And, you know, it doesn't, I remember someone saying to me, like, if I'm happy, then the cancer, then it's okay that I got cancer. Like, well, it is neither okay or not okay. It happened, right? Like, it is not something you did wrong. It did not come looking for you. It's, you know, it happened. I would prefer it hadn't happened, but it happened. So why do I want to be miserable? Right? Like, let's not do that. Let's just not do that.
Can we talk about surgery?
Sure. Yeah, let's talk about surgery.
Because it can be anything from a lumpectomy through to like double mastectomy. Is that correct?
It can be. For breast cancer. There's other kinds of cancer. What would you like to know?
I guess does it partially, okay, partially your genetics. I understand that. Could it be also when you're diagnosed as to... And I understand there can still be a certain amount of personal choice when, for example, you come from a long line of breast cancer, you may choose that double mastectomy.
So you can have nothing. You can have a lumpectomy. You can have a unilateral mastectomy. You can have a bilateral mastectomy. And if you have a mastectomy, there's all kinds of different reconstruction options, which start with none. There are people who go flat, all the way through what I did, which is, I think, awesome, the deep flap, where they took my belly fat and they constructed new breasts out of my tissue using my blood supply. And so I have no foreign bodies in my body, which is kind of amazing if you think about it. It's all still mine.
I've never even heard of that.
It's an amazing surgery. They've been doing it now for probably 20 to 30 years. But the choice of what kind of surgery does have a lot of factors and is a conversation to have with your surgeon and maybe with your psycho-oncologist and your oncologist. And the psycho-oncologist is a mental health provider who specializes in the issues that face cancer patients and their families. So with BRCA1, my genetic mutation, once you've had a tumor, the probability of a second tumor is high. There's something about once the mutation is triggered, it seems to happen again. So the recommendation for people like me with BRCA1 is you should have a bilateral mastectomy. Now, a good friend of mine that I met during treatment, both triple negative, having the same treatment, but she's not BRCA1. She doesn't have any genetic markers. She just was 38 and unlucky. They said, let's just shrink it using chemo, do a lumpectomy and do radiation. And what that does for her, A, is she doesn't have to have new breasts. She retains sensation in her breasts. And should she want to have children and nurse, the non-radiated breast can likely nurse. That's what my sister did. So my sister's first surgery was a lumpectomy with radiation because she was so young and she wanted to nurse. She decided to do a prophylactic bilateral mastectomy after she had her children because, again, we have this heightened risk. Some people do mastectomies because they don't want to ever hear you have breast cancer again. They just can't live with the risk. They don't want to be screened every 3 to 6 months. And that's a personal choice. You do take away the risk. You also lose, there's no way to retain sensation in your breasts. So for me, I knew I told my husband when we were dating, if I get breast cancer, I'm going to do a bilateral mastectomy because I don't want to do this over and over again. Like this is just not worth it. There, my breasts were not worth that to me. But I did have 3 kids. I did nurse each of them for a year. I got to have those experiences. So, you know, I kind of feel like I got the best of both worlds. Now, the reconstructions, you know, people say, okay, what about doing a unilateral? So again, you retain the right to nurse, the ability to nurse, if that's going to be something in your life. You retain sensation. Good. They will never quite look like they match because surgeons are great, but, you know, bodies are funky and bodies change, right? Like as we age, gravity does its thing. Not so much on the reconstructed one. So, you know, you have to accept that, okay, I'm going to be a little off if I do a unilateral. If I do a unilateral and I do the deep, like what I did, no implant, you can only do the deep once. So if you get breast cancer in the other breast, you can't use, it has to do with the vascular connections they make. It's a one-time thing. So my mother had so many reconstructive surgeries because she kept wanting the unilateral to match. And it was only when we found out about BRCA and she had the other breast prophylactically and had the deep flap that she's like, ugh, now I look in the mirror and I feel like I look like me. I look more normal. My sister is so fit, she couldn't have the deep. So she had implants. Implants can be great. Your boobs are always perky. You never have to wear a bra. But there can be, you know, it's a foreign body in your body. There can be reactions and scar tissue. And these are just things worth talking to your doctor. The deep flap is a 14-hour surgery with a longer recovery than the implants, but long-term has fewer complications. So these are all just choices, you know, about what you want. And there's probably other options for reconstruction that I don't even know about. But the fact is you have choice. And when people say, oh, I'm scared about a long surgery, I'm like, why? You're asleep. Like, seriously, unless you have a heart condition or some reason that extended time under anesthesia is a risk to you, in which case, you know, listen to your doctors. It's not worth your life to die on the table for, you know, having nicely matched breasts. But if you're not in that group, explore all of your options and choose what is going to make you feel most comfortable in your body, you know, when it's over. Because I intend to use this body for another 50 years.
I always say I'm going to live forever. And
exactly. Exactly.
Okay. There's no way to word this correctly, I don't think. Is recovery the gift or the light at the end of what could be a very long tunnel?
Recovery, they call it survivorship. We call it, you know, whatever you want. Being able to live a full, active life. I mean, for my 54th birthday, the gift I gave myself was I trained to be able to do a fully unassisted pull-up. And the reason that was really important is, I mean, I had surgery through this whole area, right? And to be able to do a pull-up required full range of motion, strength, power, right? If I could do that, I can do anything. I remember, I think I wrote about this in the book. When you have the deep flap, you're told to not do exercise for 3 months. And I got a special dispensation. At 6 weeks, I was allowed to do an e-bike, but as long as I had an e-bike, because I wasn't working that hard. But all the weightlifting that I do and the exercise and the skiing and whatever. But I got cleared, must have been August 4th. My reconstructive surgeon said, healing's great. You're cleared for anything. I said, anything. She said, anything. I said, great. 3 days later, I sent her a video of myself wakeboarding. The nurses had a heart attack. Like, you had this deep flap. This could be, you know, dangerous. And I said, I'm 3 months post and I'm fully cleared. But you got to love my surgeon, Dr. Piper, because her response was, woohoo! Right? Like, I want to do everything. And so is recovery the goal? I think your life is the goal, right? Like, however you want to live your life. I want to be there. I mean, my mother was incredibly motivated by my sister and I. And she's like, I'm not leaving my girls. I'm sure the friends of yours who died felt the same way. My mother just got lucky, right? And I want to see my kids lives unfold. I want to watch that whole thing. I want to travel the world with my husband. I want to teach another 1,000 people how to be better leaders. I want to help 1 million people face cancer with power and confidence and, you know, knowledge. Like, these are things I want to do. So I wasn't really interested in cancer taking those off the table.
There we go. Let's talk about the teams for a minute. We started talking about it's a team sport, but you've got support teams, oncology teams, surgical teams. Do they all like talk to each other, or?
Well, again, I'm in the U.S. health system, which, you know, and you're in Canada, so it may be different, and it's probably different in Europe. So I'm going to be ethnocentric, and I can only really speak to what happens in America. But when my dear friend was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and this man is brilliant, and he reached out to me and we started talking, he said, I keep waiting for someone to call and say, I'm the person who's going to coordinate all of this. And I said, yeah, you're going to be waiting a really long time. It's you. And he said, you're kidding. And I said, I'm not. Now, there is one healthcare system in the United States I know about, the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. They have oncology nurse navigators, and they call and say, I'm here to help you navigate all of this, and I'm going to take you through it. Like, I wish every health system did this, because truly, the first time you're going through it, you don't know your head from your ass. You're like, what do I do first? And yes, I have a book, but, you know, most people, their first reaction is not, I know, I'm going to go read a book, right? It's just not. So that's why I tell people, like, buy the book now and have it, because pulling the book down and saying, which chapter am I in? What do I need? There's an index. It's really easy. And each chapter has lessons learned at the end, or like a batter up at the each section that summarizes it. So you don't even have to read the whole thing. You could read like 3 pages and you'd be like, oh, now I know what to do. But I explained to him that you're the quarterback, but here are the players you need on your team. So he has a wonderful wife, 2 grown children, and a community of friends who love him. That's the fan group. Great. Now we have the team that's on the field. You need an oncologist first. You probably are going to need a surgeon. You might need a radiologist. You should have a psycho-oncologist, because I think mental health is healthcare. But number one is the oncologist. And if you can, and he could because of where he lives, you really want to choose a national comprehensive cancer institute. The reason for that is they're going to be cutting edge on all the clinical trials and all the latest protocols. And there's a lot of research that can be the difference between saving your life or not. Particularly, he has pancreatic, so his cancer is hard to treat. Now, when my mother had bladder cancer, which, again, my mother's had cancer multiple times, when she first was treated, we thought it was kind of run-of-the-mill. She was treated locally in Florida. Good doctors, whatever. It just turned out her cancer didn't respond to the standard protocol. And so my sister and I both live out here, and there's 2 national comprehensive cancer institutes within 30 miles of where we live. And my sister was able to get her an appointment with a internationally recognized person for her type of cancer. And, you know, we see this doctor, she has a plan. And part of the plan was going to be every other week for 12 weeks, this really nasty chemo. And my parents don't live in California. Their community is not in California. And so we said, well, can they administer that back in Florida? And the doctor said, let's do the first round here, just so we can see how she reacts and whatever. But yeah, let's do that. They can do that. And as long as they do scans at this time, and we'll do phone calls, you know, but the doctor there can be in charge of administering this protocol. So my parents got to go home, be in their house, be with their community, with the benefits of care structured from a national comprehensive cancer institute. Doctors are used to collaborating. So don't limit your imagination by like, okay, where can I get the most cutting edge care? And again, this is America. I think you have a little more restrictive in Canada. But in America, where can I get the most cutting edge care? That doesn't mean I have to live there necessarily. It could be I travel there if I can afford it. If you can't afford it, there are foundations to help people travel to get to care. So again, don't let your imagination be limited. So we talked about the people on the team. Another person on the team can be an oncology social worker. And like a medical psycho-oncologist, they're there for mental health, but they also know about resources, financial resources, support resources. And all of this is part of the game plan, right? I was not someone who went to support groups because I am familial with a support group. But if you're alone in this, you might want a support group. You know, if you can't afford a psycho-oncologist, because usually it's not covered by insurance, you do need a place where you can voice your feelings without worrying about how the other person feels. When you voice your feelings to people who love you, you worry about making them feel bad. And that's normal, and that's wonderful, and it's human, but you still need a place to voice your feelings. So that team, oncologist, surgeon, radiation oncologist, nutritionist, psycho-oncologist, social worker. I added a massage therapist. I added an acupuncturist. And all of that with the full knowledge of my oncologist was very transparent. Because, hey, if that helps deal with side effects, if that makes this more comfortable, helps me take care of myself, great. Let's do it.
Wow. Yeah. It's amazing.
I think the narrative about cancer is mostly wrong. Unfortunately, there are enough examples like your friends in the moms group that reinforce this narrative that cancer is going to kill you. Cancer is going to make it impossible for you to live, work, travel. You know, cancer's just going to be terrible. I mean, cancer's not great. I want to be clear, like, not great. But my cancer year was one of the happiest years of my life, because of all these happiness tripwires, because of the community, and because I crushed the cancer. Like, let's be clear, I had a good outcome. I wanted to share with people a different narrative. And then before I did, I wanted to say, am I an outlier? Am I just weird? Is my mother and sister, are we just weird? So I interviewed about 25 other people, including a number of people who are stage 4 thrivers. And what I found is we all had the same story. We all found that we had strength, that we had joy, and that cancer produces an interesting filter through which you see the rest of your life, right? There's a, maybe it's gratitude, I'm here. Maybe it's strength, look at what I can do. Maybe it's just relief, like I faced something hard and I got through it. But we are resilient. This is the worst club with the best members. And everybody says, you know, like, I don't put off doing what I wanted to do because I don't know that I have tomorrow. And that's not morbid. It's present, right? It's like Chandra, the woman who, the brilliant woman behind Grey's Anatomy and all these shows, and she did a year of saying yes, right? That's a very, right? That's like a very cancer survivor type of thing to do. Be like, what could I say yes to, right? You see people who weren't in your life. I have a dear friend who I said she is a gift of my cancer, because before I had cancer, she was someone I knew and we talked occasionally, but afterwards she's one of my best friends because of how she showed up. And that doesn't mean other people didn't show up well. I'm very blessed. But I know people who were disappointed, like, you know, somebody didn't show up who they thought would have. And who knows what was going on in that other person's life. It's probably not a grade on your relationship. But, you know, people have all kinds of things going on in their lives, and people have varying levels of comfort in being around somebody facing cancer. Like it forces you to be aware of your own mortality when you're talking to somebody who's facing something that can kill them and hopefully won't. But this is a great club. And I wanted people to reframe cancer from the worst thing that ever happened to an unwelcome thing that happened that I can get through. I can even get through it in a way that feels good. And how powerful is that?
And I want to remind our listeners too that like our generation, my generation, is the first generation that has mm-hmm. really learned to advocate for themselves, to have control of the journey, whatever that journey is, if it's medical based. And yeah, just you got to get out there.
You know, having control isn't coming with printouts to your doctor and saying, what about this study? What about this? What about that? Like, that's kind of annoying. Yeah. But coming to your doctor with questions is awesome. Coming to your doctor with data. So I built trackers that I make available on my website at joellekaufman.com, tracking side effects, tracking the meds. And I would just share those documents with my medical team. So they had a daily, they weren't looking at it every day. They looked at it once every 3 weeks. But I couldn't tell them what happened 3 days ago, let alone 2.5 weeks ago, except that it was in my tracker. So, you know, crushing the cancer curveball is a really, it's a light read. I tell people, like, this is the happiest cancer book you're ever going to read. There's not anger. It's not a sad story. It's not a pity party. It's simply a pretty happy experience facing something pretty unpleasant. It has the stories of multiple people. So it's not just my story, it's lots of people's stories to help show the different flavors and colors and perspectives. But the actions you can take, you will feel confident. You will feel more sure-footed in something that is probably pretty unfamiliar, and God willing, it stays unfamiliar. But that's really what the book is about. And the people who read it have written to me and found that it really does give them hope and confidence and, you know, just a little bit more predictability in an unpredictable time. And who doesn't want that?
It's really a joy talking to you because you in yourself are a happiness tripwire. Like, you just bring such a positive attitude to the whole thing. It's just crazy. What haven't we talked about that you want women to know about the
breast cancer? So I think people should know that your body is an amazing thing. And if you have to lose your breasts, that doesn't mean your sex life ends, right? There's plenty of erogenous zones and there are plenty of ways to feel pleasure. Whatever you're worried about with your body as a sexual thing, and I think, you know, by the time we reach our age and whatever, we're always redefining that anyway. But it is more than possible to experience intimacy and joy post-cancer. I think that's important for women to know. The other thing I want women to know is, unfortunately, there are doctors who are dismissive, oh, it's nothing. And there are stories in my book of women who got, oh, it's nothing for a couple of years. So, you know, if you have a doctor who says, oh, it's nothing, you get another doctor, right? That's absolutely not okay. If you've sensed something different in your body, it is their job to rule out that it is anything to be worried about, and oh, it's nothing, you're too young, that's not what it feels like, whatever. F you, find out for sure. Because early detection is the key to crushing this curveball. And, you know, if you can't detect it early, as I said, there are some cancers that they're not symptomatic until they're pretty late. then use the book to make the journey as good as it possibly can be. Because even if, God forbid, you only have a few months, you want those months to be good. You want those months to be full of love and connection. And, you know, the only gift of a terminal cancer diagnosis is it gives people a chance to say what they need to say. It's the only one. I mean, like, it's a nightmare. But I want people to know, like, it's probably not that. It's probably just going to be an interruption, an irritation, something you have to get through, and you are strong enough, you can get through it. And that's what I want them to know.
Pregnant pause. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
So you can find me at joellekaufman.com. That's JoelleKaufman.com. I have socials that you can follow across the top, and they will all work after this call. you can also find the book anywhere, any online bookstore. So it's available Amazon Canada, Amazon the US, Barnes & Noble, Books Inc., everywhere that sells books. It's available both digitally and as a paperback. A lot of people like the paperback because they start putting in post-it notes and making comments, and it's designed for that. And frankly, if you want to rip it apart and make your own binder with different parts of the action items, that's okay. My feelings aren't hurt.
I would think you'd take that as a compliment.
I would. So important. I would.
So I'm just going to say, I don't know if we've actually come out and said it completely, Crushing the Cancer Curveball, a playbook for the newly diagnosed, their family and friends.
That is the name of the book. And I wish you all health, strength, and tons of happiness.
I want to add too, because I was digging around on your website, that you have a whole bunch of like checklists and things like that. So
yeah,
a really good resource.
Yeah, the website's got great resources, and there's QR codes in the book that can take you straight to them. So if you're, you know, I have a workbook on the website. So if you want to actually have a PDF that does everything from how to prep for a doctor's appointment to how to talk to people, plan your communication plan, even to how to do some daily self-care, that's all in the workbook. And that's available on the website, as are checklists and spreadsheets and the trackers. I even did a financial simulator, because the number one source of stress for cancer patients is money. And it's just crazy, because I think once you've realized, okay, this isn't going to kill me, but I can't necessarily work as hard. And if you're in a job where, like what you do with the elder care, if you can't do the hours, you don't get paid. And so you end up having higher expenses, because cancer care comes with a bunch of expenses that are non-medical. That could be travel, that can be, you know, whatever. And you could have lower income. So what I did with the simulator with a financial advisor is we put in, so you could look at scenarios and understand when it could become a financial problem for you. Because just like early detection is the key to the best outcomes with cancer, early knowledge of where your financial risk is for cancer is an early way to work with those social workers and say, I'm going to need help. I'm going to have trouble paying my mortgage or paying for this debt or whatever it is. I don't want people to go into credit card debt because they have cancer. There are so many generous foundations and philanthropists, and you know, there's so many options, but you don't know that until you're in a crisis. So let's try to find out before there's a crisis.
I'll add in there too, and I realize that some it can be cost prohibitive, but a person could also look into now, before you get the diagnosis, to something like critical care insurance and
sure.
things like that.
Long-term care insurance, critical care insurance. Yeah. These are conversations to have with your financial advisor if you have one, or you know, there's often people at, you know, brokerages that are in the financial advisory business. So it's worth understanding what your resources are, what the terms are of those policies. Because, and you know, it's funny, people ask how they can help. So one of the ways, if someone has to travel in order to see their doctor, get care, if you have airline miles or hotel miles, hotel points, those are ways that you can materially relieve the stress for somebody.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right? And there's no problem with you using your points, your miles, for somebody else.
There you go. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Why not?
Yeah, we haven't discussed anything personal.
No,
yet.
I have barely, I mean, like, we're not on video, but I haven't taken off my shirt yet.
Not necessary.
I know. Wasn't going to do it.
Oh, okay. Leprechaun Canyon. Was that a one-off or is that just another weekend for you?
So I'm really impressed that you know this. Okay. So I am very blessed. I have a wonderful family. And my sons each took a gap year. And my one that plays baseball, because he was playing baseball, really couldn't go travel, do lots of things. But during the spring, he couldn't play baseball because that would violate his eligibility. And so one of the things he and I did is we hooked a RV up to my husband's pickup truck. And he and I went and explored some of the beautiful national parks of the southwestern United States. And I knew that he's a fabulous athlete, very agile. I said, you know, this canyoneering thing, I think will be fun. And so I arranged a private guide and we camped and we went out canyoneering. So what canyoneering is, for those of you who don't know what the sport is, you basically hike or boulder up a hill or whatever. And then there are carabiners and things mounted into the rock and you rappel down on ropes. Okay. So at Leprechaun Canyon, we had hiked up and then it was about rappelling down. And it's one.
And you're harnessed, aren't you?
Of course. You're harnessed. You're controlling the speed. I mean, safety is a key part of the whole experience. But it was a really neat thing. I mean, you're basically going to go over the side of a cliff, right? And how many times in life do we have to just, you know, check our safety, check our harness, and then take the step and go over the side? Zero, you're never doing it. You have done it in your life. Agnes, you built a podcast. You stepped over that cliff and you built this thing. Like, it's a metaphor. I did it physically. I think I've already established I'm a little nuts, right? A funny story on that. So my son and I were out for the first hour of this canyoneering with the guide, Brian, who was a gift from God. And I'm like hurling myself over this rock to try to get up. And the two of them are like springing. And Brian stops and says, "We got to talk." I said, "Okay." He says, "We got to talk about the elephant in the room." I'm like, "We're outside in a canyon. Okay." He's like, "Radically different athletic ability." And I said, "Oh, so you're telling me that my 18-year-old, 6'2" collegiate athlete son is more capable than his 50-year-old, 5'2 desk jockey mother?" He's like, "Yes." I'm like, "No kidding." like, "Of course. I told you this when I booked the tour." And he's like, I said, "Work. I want him to have a great time. Just don't kill me." Right? Like, figure out how to do this so I don't die and go have a good time. And we did. And he was great. He gave my son ways to support me and things he could do. And, you know, so we did two hikes. One was Leprechaun Canyon. And then the next day after camping, I told the two of them, "Why don't you guys go do one without me? And then come back and I'll do the fourth one with you. So you two can go get your yayas out. Like, go have a great time. I'm really happy to sit here by the campfire and read a book." So that's how that happened. And I recommend it. I think for women to go out and face your fears, you know, all of the canyoneering routes are graded. So a guide like Brian, he's only going to bring you on something that is within your fitness level. Right? So you're not actually going to be at any risk. And what was challenging for him is that my son could do multiple levels better than I could.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, that's fine. Like, let's figure out how to work that out. And we did. And it's a great memory. It's a great memory. Thank you for asking.
Okay. I will say that you're a better woman than I am.
Just no.
Leave that the way it is.
I'm just a little crazier. That's all.
Oh, no, 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 no. You don't get that one. I'm just not going over the edge of a cliff with nothing but a harness and a piece of rope. Ah, oh, dear. Okay.
You might like it. You might like it, Agnes.
No, there's a whole bunch of things I'll try to like, but not that.
Okay, that's fine.
You'll never convince me.
No worries.
Ah, oh, dear. Okay. Your website link is in the show notes. All of your links are on the on your page at our website.
Wonderful.
Listeners, by this age, we've all known someone who's had cancer. Many of you will have been the recipient of that diagnosis. Talk to us about your experience, the fears, the teams, the recovery. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there was a question I didn't ask Joelle. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. We all know the odds. If it's not you or your friends, yay. It could well be a friend of your friend. So the farther we can spread Joelle's message and information, the better. I do need Joelle to correct one thing that you said just a little while ago, is that people should, the first thing they should just go buy your book, and then they're prepared. No, they listen to this.
Fine.
Then they go buy your book. Okay.
Absolutely. And again, my point is buy the book today, because you don't know when cancer is going to show up. It's always unpredictable. And so have it in your personal library. If you read it because you're curious, because I'm kind of colorful, great. If you don't read it and it sits in your library for the moment that you need it or someone you love needs it, that's okay too. It's a good resource to have on hand.
Your book is one of those books, and I have a few in my life that I buy two to begin with, so that I've always got one to give away, and then I replace that one for the next time it needs to be given away.
That's
and
so wonderful.
Keep. Yeah, yeah. So. Okay, listeners, if you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button at your favorite listening platform. That helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. You're on Substack too, aren't you, Joelle?
I am. The link to that is on joellekaufman.com, so I won't bombard people with more links.
Oh, no. On your page at our website, it's all going to be there, including the link to your book.
Fantastic.
Thank you for being my guest today, being so open about your own experiences and sharing your book. I really mean what I say. It's, you know, the first time out, you buy two.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of the week.
You too.